Number one, are you ready? Are you ready? We will build a great wall along the southern border, and Mexico will pay for the wall. They don't know it yet, but they're going to pay for the wall. Number two, we are going to end catch and release. Number three, zero tolerance for criminal aliens. Zero, zero. Day one, my first hour in office, those people are gone.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's September 1st, 2016, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Good morning and welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day, another month. It's September. Can you believe it already? September. And, well, I guess we got to kick through it, right? It's going to be fall before you know it, snowing before you know it. So enjoy this nice weather while we have it. Lots to talk about today. Later in the program, we're going to be talking a little bit about the situation with Apple. We'll be talking about the future under Tim Cook. It has already been 5 years, believe it or not, that he's been in charge of Apple after the passing of the past chairman, Steve Jobs. That has already been 5 years. It's hard to imagine that. Later in the program, we're going to be talking about, too, the sale of the Tribune Tower. What is next for this iconic building that we work in every day and that sits along Michigan Avenue for everyone to see? We'll be talking about that. But first, to the WGN Market Desk, here are some of the numbers. You heard Vic tease you with a little bit of it. In Europe, markets generally higher overnight. The French, DAX, both higher. The FTSE in London a little bit lower. In Asia overnight, markets are generally mixed as well, with the Nikkei leading the way up about 39 points. In Hong Kong and in China, markets higher as well. Here in this country, Dow futures are pointing to opening gains. When the opening bell rings later this morning, Dow futures up 29 points. The S&P NASDAQ futures up as well. Have you been following the controversy surrounding Apple in recent days? Ireland, the EU, ordering Apple to pay almost $15 billion in back taxes that it says were given to Apple illegally by Ireland. Ireland is on the side of Apple with this. There are a couple of new developments in this today. First, the Apple CEO, Tim Cook, saying this is crap, in his words, telling a reporter yesterday that he never asked for the special treatment. Apple never expected it, apparently. Also, U.S. tax law gives the Obama administration the power to double the tax rates of European companies should it dramatically escalate a dispute with the European Union over Apple's tax bill. Experts say the administration is unlikely to take that move. Even if it did, courts might strike down the action because of treaties. And then there is this story from the Agence France-Presse this morning. The huge tax bill that has been slapped on Apple has put into the spotlight nearly $2.4 trillion in untaxed earnings parked offshore by U.S. companies and other tax breaks given to U.S. companies in other countries, including Europe. A tempting target for governments seeking to strengthen their finances, $2.4 trillion. Well, as we begin the program this morning, we're going to be talking a lot about Apple. And joining us this morning is Roger Chang. And Roger Chang is a CNET executive editor. He has been reporting from the IFA in Europe. He's also been reporting along with his CNET colleagues about Tim Cook's five-year anniversary as a CNET. And he is with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Roger, good morning. Welcome.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. You're at the International. It's just the International. The F stands for?
Don't quiz me on that. It's a word I can't pronounce, but yeah. I just call it IFA.
Yeah, I can't pronounce it either. But you're there at that. It's sort of a futuristic kind of technical conference, right?
Yeah, there's this mix of appliances, phones, tablets, all kinds of different gadgets, and it's gotten a lot bigger over the last few years to include just basically any kind of electronic gadget you can think of.
Very cool to be there, and again, thank you for taking time out of coverage of that. You've been covering Tim Cook, so how's he been doing the last 5 years?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag. Tim Cook has, under him, Apple has shown record profits. The iPhone remains dominant. But, there's still questions about whether or not he's really filled Steve Jobs' shoes, in particular in respect to the innovation, right? The biggest innovation you could sort of point to with Tim Cook is that he made the iPhone bigger, which turned out to be a smart move and created a blockbuster hit there. But, the Apple Watch is his one real new product, and, the jury's still out on whether or not that's going to be a hit.
We're on with Roger Cheng again this morning, CNET executive editor. He's with us this morning from Europe, and so that's why you're hearing just a little bit of delay in our conversation. We're going to continue talking with him and have our conversation about what may be next for Apple. Also, a little bit about this latest controversy with Apple and taxes as the opening bell continues.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Markets fell slightly on Wednesday to end the month down a bit. Reports that U.S. stockpiles of crude are at a record high that weighed on energy shares. August was one of the quietest months in recent history for markets. Payroll processor ADP's private survey found U.S. businesses added 177,000 jobs in August. That's a sign that hiring remains healthy. The job growth was driven by retailers and higher-paying professional and business services jobs, but construction firms cut jobs and manufacturing remained unchanged. Pending home sales rose in July, a sign that demand for home ownership remains strong. Samsung delaying shipments of the Galaxy Note 7 smartphone in South Korea. Reports that batteries in some of the jumbo smartphones have exploded while they're being charged. Delta Airlines investing $50 million to try to end the problem of lost and delayed luggage. The airline implementing an RFID radio frequency identification tracking system. If the system works, other airlines may follow suit. Dave Packer, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Roger Cheng, CNET executive editor, who's with us from Europe today, where he's covering a technology and future conference. Roger talking to us this morning about the fifth anniversary of Tim Cook at the helm of Apple as CEO. And Roger, before the break, we were talking about some of the things in general, but the iPhone seems to be the thing and the smartwatch that Tim Cook has been focusing on lately. September 7th, we hear, is the unveiling of the new iPhone 7.
Yeah, exactly. We're expecting the next version of the iPhone come out. Although if you look at all the rumors and the speculation, the word is that the iPhone 7 isn't going to be significantly different, at least from an appearance perspective, than previous versions. So it'll look a lot like the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus. There'll be some improvements under the hood, but it sort of goes to that problem I initially talked about in terms of lack of innovation. Again, Tim Cook's biggest change to the iPhone was making it bigger, introducing a so-called phablet, and that turned out to be a great move, but he hasn't really done much to follow up with that.
He seems confident in interviews with CNET and others that the market really doesn't have to grow a whole bunch for Apple products, that there's already a solid base of people who use the various Apple products. Is that what you're finding as you talk to him? Is there concern about attracting new customers and new followers of Apple products?
I mean, Tim Cook definitely has a point when he says there's a huge base of faithful Apple consumers. They're definitely out there. They're loyal. They'll buy the new products. Keeping that base isn't an issue. The issue is sort of growing and getting to that, the next billion users or next million users. Companies looking for growth have to go out to different regions, different markets, like India or China, where there's a little bit more competition, where consumers are a bit more mindful of how much they're spending on their phones. And, iPhone is still a premium device. Even the iPhone SE, the kind of budget model that they introduced, it's still pretty pricey relative to some of the comparable phones running on Android. And so that's where Apple kind of runs into a bit of a hurdle there in terms of kind of fueling growth for that next generation. A lot of folks are kind of looking at the more affordable alternatives.
And they're talking about markets too, India, for instance, and others where they don't have the kind of wealth that we have, and they're looking for a budget option from Apple. Probably a huge market would open up if that existed. Is that something that's maybe in Apple's wheelhouse, that they will come up with budget options?
Well, I think the iPhone SE is Apple's budget option now. They, you know, they've been very reluctant to go too low. And again, the iPhone is a premium device, and to offer even, you know, sort of a budget version of it would, you know, somewhat tarnish their brand a little bit. Apple's a company that loves its profit margins. They've got some of the best margins in the industry, and you know, they want to preserve that at all costs. So putting out a budget phone just to gain market share hasn't really been Apple's MO.
The other, obviously, the other things that are in Apple's wheelhouse right now are music, the software, the watch. Do we see anything new happening in those areas in the next year or so?
I mean, you're starting to see, coming in the fall, there's going to be an update to the Apple Watch software, which will, you know, which are improvements that I think people wanted, you know, faster app times, just a smarter, more intuitive user interface. But again, like with Apple Watch, it's the jury is still kind of out on whether or not that's a success. I think, you know, it got an early pop as a lot of the Apple fanboys went and bought the watch. But as we sort of settled, it's been more than a year now. People are trying to figure out whether or not there actually is a practical use for some of these watches, not just for the Apple Watch, but smartwatches in general. It'll be interesting to see sort of where Apple goes with trying to make that product more appealing to a mass audience.
Roger, I bet, like me, you miss Steve Jobs. There was I remember the 2007 unveiling of the iPhone. It's hard to believe it was just 2007, but he had this flair when he came out on stage, you know, and we give you iPhone. And Tim Cook is a little different from Steve Jobs in that regard. But does he bring the same sort of the energy to those events and unveilings and meetings with you and others when these new products come out?
Tim Cook's an energetic guy for sure, and he's enthusiastic. But he isn't Steve Jobs. I mean, Jobs was basically a one-man show for those events. With the iPhone launch, it was pretty much Steve Jobs unveiling the iPhone. Nowadays, it's, you know, Tim Cook kind of comes on stage, he talks for a few minutes, then he kind of defers to his lieutenants, and then a number of them come out in succession to talk about the various products and services that they have. So it's definitely a different approach. And you know, it for some, it may not be as impactful as it had been back in the Steve Jobs years.
The other part of all of this is I saw an analyst recently saying there's only so far you can grow a company. There's only so much market share. There's only so many people who would buy stuff, and Apple may be reaching that point. Is that something that he's also mindful of?
I mean, he has to be mindful. You know, he still thinks that there's runway left with their products, whether it's the iPad, the iPhone, the Apple Watch, services in particular. I think you know, one of the reasons why they're talking so much about services now is because the hardware bit is starting to see a bit of maturity. So it's still kind of unclear where that growth is going to come from. But Apple certainly thinks that they've got several engines they can tap.
Roger Cheng, executive editor at CNET. Good of you to be with us today from Europe, where you're covering a future conference. We look forward to having you on again.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It is 527. One other note, by the way, about Apple is I was looking into this today. I saw a story that I hadn't seen before about Apple and Tim Cook. He was being interviewed recently back in 2016, back in May, I should say, of 2016, this year, and said he saw an iPhone in a 350-year-old painting. And so that got me wondering, I'm going to go and look at this painting. And believe it or not, there is a painting called Man Hands a Letter to a Woman in a hall that was painted 350 years ago, 1670. The woman appears to be holding a device. It is a letter, obviously, but it looks an awful lot like an iPhone. So go and look that up. Again, it's called the painting is called Man Hands a Letter to a Woman in a Hall. Tim Cook convinced that she is holding an iPhone.
From ABC News, tech trends. Are your kids sharing too much online? Social media has become the 21st century version of the water cooler, says cybersecurity expert Adam Levin.
Problem is that kids give away way too much information all of the time, and they don't realize it can come back to haunt them.
Levin says most kids may not even realize they're giving out information that could put their family at risk.
Here's my physical address, or mother's maiden name, or favorite color.
Details that could be used as answers to security questions by other members of the family, opening up the household to possible identity theft or even burglary. So in addition to equipping all internet-connected devices with strong security software, parents should also have a conversation with their kids about what not to share online.
You do not give away any information about yourself, including your age. You don't give away information about where we're going or what we're doing or what the newest, coolest thing may be in the house.
With Tech Trends, I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 536. The iconic Tribune Tower has been sold by Tribune Media. And the question is now, what will become of our home here at WGN and this building that so many know of and have worked their lives in? Let's bring in Jay Koziarz. He's the associate editor of Curbed Chicago. He's been writing about this and reporting about it. Jay, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And you?
Just as well.
Good, good. Well, you know, everybody's wondering here what could possibly become of this iconic building. And we say iconic building because it's been a part of the skyline for 100 years. What is possible here?
Absolutely. So, like you said, Steve, the building has been a huge part of Chicago's skyline for a long time, and it forms kind of the gateway to downtown's Mag Mile, along with the Wrigley Building across the street. So that building itself, completed in 1925, is landmarked by the city of Chicago. So the programming within the building could potentially change. But the biggest part about this sale that was recently completed is the entire site, which spans 3 acres, and most importantly, a lot just to the east of Tribune Tower that could support something really big. It's currently serving as a parking lot.
It is the parking lot for WGN Radio and the Tribune, as a matter of fact. And it, you're right, it is pretty big. Are you thinking maybe another skyscraper, another building like the Tribune Tower, smaller building? What could it support?
At this point, it's really unclear, you know, what exactly is going to go into that site. Now, Tribune Tower proper is about 74,000 square feet in size. The entire site can be zoned up to 2.4 million square feet. So that's really what we're looking at here and what the purchaser of the site, CIM Group, saw as value in this site.
Because people have been scratching their heads who work in the building about, you know, what could this possibly be inside? And that is, you know, could it be condos? Could it be offices? So your thinking is they may be thinking less about that and more about building something different and leaving all of this like it is?
Well, back in May, it was revealed that there were really 3 firms that were in the running to purchase the site. The first one was Riverside Investment and Development. That company was formerly known as O'Donnell Investment, and they actually had a previous working relationship with Tribune and signed a deal to redevelop their 7-acre riverfront property at 700 West Chicago. So they kind of brought in expertise of, you know, potential office use. Another company that was in the running to purchase it was Chicago's Oxford Capital. They have more of a hospitality background. For those familiar, they redeveloped the London Guarantee Exchange building into the London House, which is not too far from Tribune Tower. So that was another thought about a hotel adaptive reuse or a new hotel on site. Ultimately, the building was sold to a California-based company called CIM Group. And if your listeners aren't familiar with CIM Group, they've been in Chicago for a while, but recently, you know, they haven't really doubled down. They've tripled down on the city of Chicago. They came on board in 2012 for the Block 37 apartment tower, which recently delivered 690 units. They also have another building at 1001 South State, 40 stories tall, 397 apartment units, opening real soon. And then just early in August, they announced a partnership for a 46-story, 500-unit apartment building at 1326 South Michigan Avenue. So this is a company that purchased the sites, and based on what I just described, they're really into apartment rentals. That's 1,500 apartments they're bringing to Chicago. So if rental residential is not part of this development, I would be certainly surprised.
But also, there's the flip side of that is that's already a lot of apartments that they have going for them. One of the areas that we've been reporting on here on the Opening Bell that's in short supply downtown is office space. It's at a premium now with all of the corporations moving their headquarters here or thinking about it. Is that something that might drive them? Is that demand for office space?
Yes, that could be a big part of it as well. So they've come out and said it's going to be mixed use. So what exactly does that mean? It means it could be apartments, condos, hotel, office space, retail, really any combination of those uses. And because the site is in such a prime location, I really don't know if they could go wrong with, you know, any combination of those things. It's probably going to do well.
Is it something that you could foresee the property staying here? For instance, Tribune Media, which is the owner of WGN Radio, has said that our lease runs through 2018, so we're not going anywhere very quickly. We have our marquee studio on the street front there. Tribune Publishing might be another story with Tronc now in control. Do you foresee maybe one of these media companies staying put here?
Right. Tronc, which is formerly Tribune Publishing, which split from Tribune Media, who owned the building, they are the building's largest tenant, and they've come out and said that they have a lease through 2018. They're staying put. I believe Tribune Media, on the other hand, said that they are looking at some other office spaces for at least some of the office space they have in the building. Some of the high-visibility things they have along Michigan Avenue, that could stay, but some of their offices, they've come out and said that they're staying in Chicago, but they are evaluating some other spots.
So as we move forward here, do the new owners of this building have to be very careful about what they do to it? You've described a lot of different options, but the fact remains this is a landmark building, and people have really short diffuses when it comes to changing iconic buildings.
Absolutely. That's something to consider. So whatever they end up doing to Tribune Tower proper would need to go through Landmarks, especially if they're changing something considerable, and there's only so much they can change. So that can slow the project a little bit, and then they're also going to require some forms of city approval for the redevelopment of that empty lot as well. So, you know, real estate is pretty cyclical. Right now we're going through a boom time, but, you know, that doesn't always last. So timing is a big part of making these projects work, and also, you know, you have to consider the city approval process. For something like the McDonald's headquarters, that went through in a number of weeks. So when there's tends to be a will, at least at City Hall, it can get done pretty quick.
So let's talk a little bit more about CIM Group. You've talked about its different properties. Block 37, when you say that, people might have bristled just a little bit because that didn't happen very quickly or easily. Is CIM, from what you know about it, are they... do they have the ability to pull something like this through?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Block 37 project, yeah, it took a really long time. Parts of it were kind of a boondoggle, and it feels like it's been going on for decades. CIM actually came in 2012, and once they were a partner on that project, things moved really quickly, and we got to where we are now. Since they became a partner, that apartment tower went up. Movie theater went in there, new food court, Latinicity is in there, and other tenants as well. So that project really took off when they got involved. They're a company with a lot of resources, a lot of experience, and I think they know what they're doing.
There's another part of this, too, as you kind of look forward beyond the taking over of this building. There are some architectural ideas that you've already thought about, too, and some companies that you might think would partner with CIM.
That's right. At this point, it's really just speculation, Steve, but the previous projects in Chicago that I mentioned, the Block 37 apartment tower, as well as the two South Loop projects that CIM has brought online, they've partnered with Chicago firm SCB, and I think it would be a pretty reasonable bet to think that maybe that would be a firm they'd be looking at to develop this site as well.
And so this, if you had to, and we don't mind speculation here, but what would you, if you had to dream of something, what would you dream of for that space?
Yeah, I would say, you know, of a vertically stacked kind of, maybe almost a Trump Tower type of situation where you do have a hotel component and then above it residential. Right now, the Tribune Tower's offices, it could stay offices, but maybe just be rehabbed or have the floor plates changed in a way that's more attractive to maybe tech companies or something like that. And also just add some semi-public spaces as well, like rooftop decks, restaurants, things like that, where you don't necessarily have to live in the building or stay at the hotel to experience the building at different levels.
The hotel aspect of it is an interesting one, because if you listen to complaints of people who want to come to the Mag Mile, they often say it's hard to find places to stay along the Mag Mile. That seems like a win-win.
Absolutely. And a couple projects have come online there. I've mentioned the London House on the other side of the river. Yeah. Also, the old building at 168 North Michigan Avenue is also in the process of being renovated into a new hotel as well. So there's a definitely demand there, like you said, and companies are reacting to that.
Jay Kosiar is the associate editor of Curbed Chicago. Great conversation this morning, Jay. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Steve. Take care.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:50 on the WGN Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing upwards toward an opening that will be stronger on Wall Street today. 41 points to the higher now is the Dow future. The NASDAQ and S&P futures higher as well. Generally overnight, Europe markets have been positive. The FTSE in London now has turned positive. So all of the indices in Europe are higher this morning. The Nikkei was higher, the Hang Seng higher, all the rest of the Asian markets are lower. Let's find out the latest about commodities now in agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A much better day yesterday. The weather cleared, flying was great, and the crowds were great at the Farm Progress Show, second day for the 2016 edition at Boone, Iowa. Already, we're going into the third and final day today. Generally, a pretty good day for going to the show, because the last day, crowds are generally a little lighter. And they're looking again at a cooler, clear, sunny day. Crowds continue to be good from all over the country and all over North America. A lot of South American visitors are at the show taking a look at the latest in farm equipment and technology. Getting a lot of attention at the Farm Progress Show is the Case IH display, where they have a driverless tractor and they show what it can do. We're talking driverless cars. Well, we're at driverless tractors, and who knows what will be next. Corn harvest doing very well at the plots at Farm Progress Show. Moisture down to 24% in the corn that's been harvested, and yields for 78-day corn running at a pretty good level, according to Matt Youngman, who is the manager of the Farm Progress Show. But all in all, again at noon today, Max Armstrong and I with the band on stage in the ADM tent. Stop by from 11:30 till 1 and have the opportunity to listen to some very interesting people who join us on the show every day and giving us a chance to say hello to you. So we'll see you for the final day at the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. By the way, here's the weather forecast for the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa today. Mainly sunny conditions. It's going to be a nice day all across the area here in Chicago and through Iowa. 76 possibly for a high by mid-afternoon. Sunshine, humidity low, humidity as well, about 55%. The wind speed at around 12 miles per hour this afternoon. Beautiful day in Boone, Iowa for the last day of the Farm Progress Show. By the way, online at farmprogressshow.com. You can also follow them on Twitter at FP Show. the Farm Progress Show. A couple of other notes for us here this morning as we close out the opening bell. A couple of other stories that we're following for you this morning. From the Vatican this morning, Pope Francis is proposing adding care for the environment to the traditional gospel-inspired seven works of mercy that Christians are called to perform. Francis made the proposal in a message today to the Church World Day of Prayer for the Care of Creation, which he instituted last year in a bid to highlight his green agenda. Also today, the economic calendar is full of information and events and reports that could drive the markets. The first of those reports will come at 7:30 Chicago time today. Labor Department releases weekly jobless claims. Also, second quarter productivity data. The Institute for Supply Management releases its manufacturing index for August at 9 a.m. Chicago time. The Commerce Department will release construction spending at 9 a.m. Freddie Mac, the mortgage company, releases weekly mortgage rates at 9 o'clock. And from Detroit, automakers will release vehicle sales for August. Quite a list of economic reports due out later this morning from various sources that could drive the markets.